From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, floating format tonight. Next hour, Simeon Hine joins us. Crop formations, what do they mean? The last hour of our program tonight, we're expected to go live to Switzerland with author of Chariots of the Gods, Eric von Däniken. Now, we may not get him tonight because he was thinking he was on last night. So we'll see what happens there. So stand by for that one. Here's what's happening. The most trusted man in America may not have had too many fans in the FBI. According to a report in USA Today, the FBI destroyed its files on Walter Cronkite, the legendary CBS News anchor who died in July at the age of 92. Even though the Bureau is supposed to preserve historically important records, the paper requested that Cronkite's files under the Freedom of Information Act after his death, but was notified that some of the records pertaining to the newsman were destroyed on October of 2007. It's not the first time the FBI has eradicated records on famous figures. They did the same with Nikola Tesla and also on civil rights pioneer Rosa Parks. Her files were destroyed as well. The practice of destroying records has come under fire from journalists and historians eager to examine potential subjects through the lens of the FBI. The U.S. credit card charge-off rate rose to a record high in August as more Americans lost their jobs, in another sign that consumers remain under severe stress. The Moody's credit card charge-off index, which measures credit card loans that banks do not expect to be repaid, rose to 11.49% in August from 10.52% in July. And Bank of America Corporation and J.P. Morgan Chase plan to loosen their overdraft policies amid an uproar among some lawmakers over the fees imposed by banks. The charges include no fees at BNA if customers overdraw their account by less than $10 in one day, and no fees at J.P. Morgan if their account is overdrawn by $5 or less. Gerald Salente, our trends research expert, on the line with us now. Gerald, this credit card story is important. Not a lot of mainstream media folks picked up on it. This tells me things have not gotten better yet.
No, what it also says is that with the credit card defaults rising, that along with unemployment, how is there going to be a recovery? Because 72% of our GDP is consumer-based. So there's no recovery at hand. And something very important to watch, George, and the mainstream media is not talking about it at all, and that's the dollar is now at a yearly low against the major currencies, and gold prices, as you well know, are fixed pretty well over $1,000 an ounce, headed toward $1,200. So these are things to watch. And also tomorrow, the G20 meeting in Pittsburgh, they may do some manipulations to weaken the other currencies, strengthen the dollar, and drive gold prices down.
Gerald, you've been saying for months now that the commercial real estate market, that's the next trouble. I think it's starting. Matter of fact, I'm in St. Louis for a little bit right now, and I'm starting to see signs of this all over the place. I'm sure you are too.
Yes, what's holding it back is the Federal Reserve has a program termed asset-backed loan facility. And what they're doing is they're loaning commercial real estate developers our money to bail them out. And that's going to be going on for another 3 to 6 months. So it's propping up the collapsing market, but it's doomed to fail.
All right, Gerald, thank you so much. Gerald Salente's website, trendsresearch.com. NASA's first version of the rocket slated to replace the space shuttle and send astronauts back to the moon will make its debut test launch October 27th, 4 days early. The rocket, a demonstration booster called Ares 1X, was previously scheduled to blast off October 31st, but engineers preparing the booster were able to complete work in time for the earlier liftoff, according to NASA. And NASA is holding a major news briefing at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday to discuss new science data from the moon collected during national and international space missions. Our science advisor, Richard C. Hoagland, has been following this story, and he'll be with us tomorrow to give us a full report on this news briefing. He's pretty excited about it. Scientists have presented results of an experimental new drug which in early stage trials has significantly shrunk skin cancer tumors. The researchers from Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York said their results were unprecedented. While not a cure, the study of 31 patients with late stage skin cancer suggested the therapy could improve the quality of life and extend lifespan. Huge dust storms in Australia, all over the place. If you can imagine this, forcing people to stay indoors, stripping thousands of tons of valuable farmland topsoil, just keeps blowing away out there down under. And two brothers, these are the stories you live for. Two brothers who were separated at birth were reunited when they both ended up working at the same furniture removal company. Now, what are the odds of something like that happening? Co-workers would ask if 36-year-old Gary Nesbitt and 35-year-old Randy Jobert were brothers, as they looked so familiar. Both were given up for adoption as babies, then attended rival high schools and lived in neighboring towns on the Maine coast. Their paths crossed in July when Mr. Jobert started working with Mr. Nesbitt at a furniture removals company. Both are light-haired, wear glasses, have stocky builds, wear goatees and baseball caps. Mr. Jobert surprised his brother after he found out the names of his biological parents, who had died by then. I said, "Gary, I'm going to ask you a strange question. Are you adopted?" He takes off his hat and says, "How did you know that?" It was an amazing story. And to make this story even stranger, incredibly, after the brother's story was covered by local media, they then discovered a half-sister, Joanne Campbell, 41 years old, who turned up at their workplace with her birth certificate. There are no coincidences. In a moment, the science behind Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol, and Lynn McTaggart, the author of The Field and The Intention Experiment, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This hour, Lynn McTaggart with us. Lynn is an internationally recognized spokesperson on the science of spirituality. She is the architect of the Intention Experiments, the largest internet-based mind-over-matter experiments in history, and her latest work, The Intention Experiment, and website for The Intention Experiment, prominently featured in Dan Brown's new book, The Lost Symbol. You're on page 56, I believe, Lynn, aren't you?
I am, and part of a major plot line in the book this time.
That's exciting.
Oh, it's mind-blowing, George. None of us had any idea. He kept it really under wraps.
Yesterday, I had William Henry on the program, and we're convinced that a lot of William's work is in the book as well. But, you know, Dan's is a novel, and he did his thing with that. But William's been very instrumental in uncovering stories about the Capitol and the Dome and everything that that it has. Now, tell me why Dan Brown was interested in your work.
Well, he's looking at the big idea in The Lost Symbol is about the power of thought, and the power of thought as being investigated by frontier scientists. And there's actually a frontier scientist. There's, as he calls them, a noetic scientist, who is, you know, a consciousness researcher, who's in the book, who's a woman, a middle-aged woman who's been working on this and is very interested in doing giant group experiments as well as looking at, you know, mind over matter in her lab. So that's part of the story. And her name's Catherine Solomon. And she and Robert Langdon, who's the usual protagonist he's got, you know, his symbologist from Harvard, have to solve a kidnapping. And that not only involves, you know, finding some various clues, but there's also a lot of material in there about Freemasonry and a lot of ancient wisdom and ancient religion that also looked at the power of thought. So what Brown's doing is trying to bring together these old and new ideas.
You've been working on this intention experiment. Tell me a little bit more about what's happening since you were with me a few weeks ago.
Well, it's really exciting, George. We just ran one last Saturday. We're running this thing called the Clean Water Experiment, which is a series of experiments with different scientists that's going to culminate with me going and working on a giant experiment on a real lake with Dr. Masaru Emoto in Japan next year.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've started out doing is seeing if we can change some basic qualities of tap water into mineral water. So what we did with Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona last weekend was our second experiment, seeing if we can change the energetic footprint of tap water. And that, you know, all water, like all things, has an energy footprint, almost like an aura. And if you can change one to the other, you've changed some real basic quality about it. So what we had all of our audience do, and they all come onto my website, theintentionexperiment.com, and send intention to a target that's sitting in one of the labs. And in this case, we had water samples sitting at University of Arizona. And we had people from countries all over the world come onto our website, send an intention to change that footprint. We showed them photos, and so far we ran one, we had very promising results on that. We haven't got the results yet for this one, but we're expecting something positive.
Well, and that's how you do experiments, Lynn. You've got this under control. Mine are all over the place, and I'm convinced they work, but they always have repercussions. Here's an example. Last year, when the city of Atlanta, Georgia, seemed to be drying up, literally, they were running low on drinking water. The main lake that they get their water from was really low. So we started our experiments praying for rain, mind consciousness for rain. And
yes,
it did, and we did get some rain. I mean, the lake stayed low, but we did get some rain. What happens over the last week, but we have torrential rainstorms in the southeast, specifically around Atlanta, Georgia, where a number of people have died because of the flooding waters. I'm beginning to think these things,
wow,
if they're not controlled right, are out of control. Did we do something? Did we do this?
Well, this is the question, and this is what we have to ask under controlled conditions. And I think if you and I set up an experiment with one of our scientists, like Dr. Schwartz or any of the other scientists working in this area, we can find out the answer to that question. It looks like you probably did. When we ran a similar giant experiment like this, trying to lower violence in Sri Lanka last year, we seem to have this major effect. And I had scientists studying all the data, as I think I mentioned to you, for 2.5 years, looking at the violence data and then looking at our week of sending intention. And we found a real pivotal change in the whole progress of the war. So under those kinds of controlled conditions where scientists knew what to study and were studying it, then you can start to make some comments about it. And I think that's what would be fun, is for us to think of something where we can really control it. And also in the case of what we do, we also know exactly who's participating. We control that too, in that we have them register. And then we know who's doing it, how many people are doing it, from what countries, and we have some sense of what's happening.
But, you know, in our case, Lynn, my God, people died this time. I mean, that's pretty scary.
This is what is worrying about this, is how much power do we have? This is what happened to us with our peace intention experiment, too. We sent an intention to lower violence. At first, violence went plummeted up or rocketed up before plummeting down. And we wondered to ourselves, just like you did we do this? Now, ultimately, there was a really great outcome, but this is what we don't understand about the power of this yet. How powerful is this? And that's why I'm taking baby steps in the main, because I don't know if we sent intention to a particular person, let's say, and had all these people around the world doing it, are we going to blow this person's head off? We don't know yet.
We don't know that. Do you remember the movie, the old one, Miracle on 34th Street?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and, Santa was in the court. They were trying to prove that he was nuts and he wasn't Santa, and he was on the stand saying, no, I am Santa. And the post office ended up proving that he was Santa when they brought in thousands and thousands of letters that kids had written to Santa. And that's how it was a beautiful movie. But I'm beginning to wonder if that's the stage we have to go to in order to convince people this works. Do we have to be in court to prove that things like this happen?
Well, I think what's so exciting about the Dan Brown book is that although we had a big audience for things like the intention experiment and the power of thought, and certainly that was shown by the book, The Secret, how many people are interested in this, you now have the best-selling book in the world talking about this. And talking about the fact that there's a lot of science in it. And I think that's what's also exciting about this. He actually has a crazy quilt of, and this is how Dan Brown likes to do it, you know, he takes a crazy quilt of influences. And in this case, with the scientist in there and her experiments, I can decode where it all came from. And there's real science in there. He's got equipment that really exists in certain labs. You know, Gary Schwartz has some. Dr. Marilyn Schwartz from the Noetic Sciences has some. He's got, Dean Radin has some. He's got studies that those guys and many others have done, the PEAR Lab with Robert John and Brenda Dunn. He's got all kinds of cute little nods to things. He's got he mentions books in there, and you know, he mentions my book. He mentions intention experiments. So, and he mentions, you know, these big online experiments like mine. So I think what he's trying to point to is the fact that there's loads of science here, and trying to introduce the audience to that. And that's true. It's loads of science. It's just what we need to learn is how powerful is the power of thought.
Lynn, if people want to participate in the intention experiment, what do they do?
They come onto my website, www.theintentionexperiment.com, and they just register. And then we send them all the instructions. Now, we'll be having a new intention experiment in about a month's time, 6 weeks' time. We're going to be trying to change bacteria in water and turn harmful bacteria into helpful bacteria. If we can do that, we can really go a long way toward cleaning up polluted water. So what I'm trying to do in my intention experiments with these baby steps is to show exactly how powerful the power of thought is and how powerful it is to change things in our world and actually heal our world. So that's what we're working on. And if we can do this, and if we can do things like change pH in water, which is one of our other experiments, we'll, you know, we then can look at cleaning up polluted bodies of water.
Well, so we may not need chemicals in pools if we can do that, huh?
Well, this is what we're working on. And so if people want to participate, they just sign up. We give them the instructions. At a certain time, a certain place, people from all over the world come onto our website at the exact same moment. And they follow through a little procedure. We tell them what to do. We tell them how to get into a very particular mind state, heart state, and exactly what intention to send. And we actually physically show them the target. And the pages automatically flip over. Music comes on, meditative music. Everybody gets in a big focus state, and we all send it together. And the message from people all over the world afterward, and they write on my website, is that they feel this overwhelming, overpowering sense of unity. It's something they can actually feel. So it's all very exciting.
Do you think people get Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol?
I think they're starting to. You know, it's only been out a week, and I think the people who have written to me afterward are getting the whole big idea of it. And it's great rollicking fun. I remember this is a, you know, it's a page-turning thriller. And so it delivers a lot of these big ideas in a very simple way, although he's taken great pains to be accurate with it. So I think that's what's really exciting about it, too, is that it delivers these big and sometimes complicated ideas in a simple way.
Lynn, you're doing remarkable work, and so many others, you know, are hoping that these experiments continue to prove to all of us that the intention truly does work. Because I think eventually we can all start doing some very remarkable things. But I think the ancients understood this a long time ago, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, George. I mean, I think, and that's what Brown really is looking at. He looks at biblical references to this. He looks at the Freemason stuff about this and many other things in between. And what he's really saying is all these ancient cultures didn't think that there was a God outside of us, somebody sitting up on top of a cloud, you know, being judgmental about us and us being the other. He believed God is inside of us and we are the creator and that we are creating our world. And that's really what the frontier scientists I've written about in my books are talking about, is the idea that we can create, that we, through the power of thought, through the power of observation and intention, we're affecting our world at every moment.
We're going to take phone calls with you next, Lynn, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll give you the numbers in just a second. Indeed, indeed, indeed. Next hour, Simeon Hine joins us on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll take phone calls with Lynn McTaggart on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go with your phone calls with Lynn McTaggart in just a second here on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn, of everything that you've done with the intention experiments, what have you been able to conclude at this point why it works?
It works because there's some power in group thought that I've been exploring in a big way and in a little way. I've been very excited to see, both on our website and in workshops I hold and in just interpersonal things that we do with people on the site. We have an intention of the week and now a financial intention of the week, where people with problems put their names out and we get details about them and we ask our whole web community to send an intention to them. And what we're finding is this real cohesive power in the power of group. Now, it doesn't have to be big, big groups. It can be little groups of 8 and 10, but there seems to be some kind of magnified power. And it's very exciting when I see this in person. When we have somebody with a health problem and we have them being the subject of an intention, where this little group of maybe 8 or 10 sends intention to them. And not only the person themselves, the person who's the subject of it, but also the senders, the healees, also feel better. So, and we've had some remarkable situations with it. So I'm fascinated by a kind of magnification power in groups, however big they are. And as I say, I think it doesn't matter how big they are. The other thing we can conclude is that experience counts. We found the best results with people who were the best and most experienced intenders. Mm-hmm. In this case, they were healing touch practitioners. And in other cases, we've had very good results with people who meditated for 5 or 10 years. So they've been used to really focusing their minds and being able to get out of their own egos. So but it's a learned skill. That's the other thing we know. It's a learned skill. And there are certain techniques that I found and distilled from talking to a lot of intention masters about how you do it. And it's something that's simple. Anybody can learn it, but it takes practice.
That's pretty dramatic, though. The believers, the positive thinkers, those who have practiced this for years and years, they're the ones who are very good at this.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't have to, you don't have to be a master healer or a Qigong master to do this, but you need to learn some techniques that I talk about a lot in my book about how to get into a certain focused mind state, how to get into a focused heart state. So you're sending it out through your heart, not through your head. What good times there are, the right places to do it. And how to be very specific. Most people aren't very specific about what they want, and that's one of their problems. They'll say to themselves, I want another job, but they don't specify what, and so they never change.
Or get ready for whatever they're going after.
That's true, too, George. They're not really sure, you know, whether or not they can deal with the thing that they want. So, again, they're sending out, you know, we're sending and receiving all the time with our intentions. We're sending out light emissions all the time. We know this from the science. So you got to start focusing. That's the other thing when you're trying to use it in real life.
Okay, let's go to the calls now. Let's go to Anchorage, Alaska. Richard, you're up with Lynn McTaggart. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
I love you guys. She is one of my favorite guests.
Oh, sir.
Anyway,
thank you.
I really was wondering, have you ever read the Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East? Because they really explain a lot on how to do things and stuff like that. You know, and you were right. You got to be specific on the intention, okay? Because if you just say, like, for instance, we want rain in Atlanta, you don't know what you're getting. But if you say you want a long, slow drizzle, then you have an, you know, a specific intention, and that's what you're going to get. And, you know, like you said, the number of people does make a difference, because in the life and teachings, they teach that for each person you add to your group, it squares the power of your intention. You know what I mean?
I think that's really interesting that these ancient beliefs are, you know, really catching up with the science, or the science we have is are really catching up with the ancient beliefs, I should say, and that it's all converging. But that's what we're finding, is that just that slight magnification power that happens just with a little group. And I think there's something also that's magnetic to the receiver, if it's a healing intention, about having a group of strangers send intention to him or her. I mean, we find that there's something transformative. We're so used to being alone. We're so used to just, you know, being by ourselves, that if you have this kind of connection, it's almost like a reconnection of what really should be. So I'm very excited that it's in that kind of ancient, you know, talking about those ancient techniques, and that they're exactly the same.
Thanks, Richard. Next up, we go to Lincoln, Nebraska. Jane, east of the Rockies, you're on with Lynn McTaggart. Jane on Coast to Coast.
George, hello.
Hi.
I am a very long-time caller. Going back to Art's experiments with praying for all those dry times, and it worked. And I guess I wanted to make a comment about, you know, mind direction. First, I guess I'd like to say, you know, I think we spend a lot of our religious focus on righteousness and sin, but really, you know, it speaks about, you know, first we learn the milk of the word and then the meat of the word, which is learning all about the spiritual part of life and all the spiritual things and mysteries.
Yeah, I think you've got to learn that before you can even pursue what Lynn's
working. Absolutely, and I think we just don't have the time.
And well, I think, you know what's so interesting? You know what's so interesting about this Dan Brown book, The Lost Symbol? He brings in a lot of the Bible, too, to say that these kinds of ideas and teachings are in there, too. So it's very interesting that you're bringing up religion and the ideas in religion also being similar to what we're talking about.
Okay, thanks, Lynn. Next up, we go to Portland, Texas. David, you're up with us. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
How's it going, guys? Good to be on.
Okay, David, life is good.
I had a couple of quick questions. First off, I wanted to ask about in the book, intention experiments. How exactly would you get to the alpha state that you talk about in the meditating
Okay, area? And explain the alpha state, Lynn.
Okay, well, when we're in normal waking consciousness, our brain is going at a certain speed, and usually people say it's in a beta state, scientists call it. When it's in an alpha state, it's in a state of meditation or light dreaming. It means our brain speed is slowing down a bit. Now, here's the interesting thing. The intention masters I talk to and who have been studied start in that state of meditation, and then their brain speeds up when they've been measured to a gamma state, which is a speed that's much faster than waking consciousness. They are in attending to the moment with every pore of their body. Here's how I suggest you do it. You start with meditation. You get into a state of real focus, and you focus on all your five senses. So you're aware of everything that's going on in your immediate area at that moment, with your eyes, with your nose, with your taste of smell. Just be exquisitely aware of the moment, and then you focus on your intention. Now, practice that. You can practice that kind of intense focus little times of your day. It's called mindfulness meditation. That's what the ancients called it. But it's just being aware of the moment, and that develops that acute focus.
Okay, great. Next up, we go to Phoenix, Arizona. Brian, it's your turn. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi, Brian.
Hi, George. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hey, I George, I've been a listener now for a few months. I've been practicing. I'm a practicing Kabbalist now for about 20 years and studying a cult for a long time. And I wanted to comment about some of the intention work you're doing. I've been meaning to comment. I know you did another experiment in the California area with some rain not too long ago, maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're aware of a little bit of backlash in that we had here in Sedona, in Arizona, which is considered, you know, a focal point of earth energy. We had, I think it was 3 inches of rain in a half hour.
Holy cow.
And so
when
you throw that kind of intention out there, I wanted to concur with some of your other callers. You know, the energy field does square. So if you have two people, you have four times the amount of energy.
I think you're right.
Well, this is the thing. I think it's important. This is why we're taking these kinds of baby steps. And that's so interesting that you say you got that kind of unusual rain, is that we really have to be careful about what we're doing. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. But if we
it's a responsibility. It's something that's earned through practice. Like one of your others called, it takes years to know what you're doing, if you're going to practice that kind of thing and unleash that. This is a very old occult secret, that this is the power. But with the knowledge and the way things are today and the spread of knowledge, there's a lot of novices out there, and things can get out of whack.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes bad ideas are the result of group intention. I'm convinced that Nazi Germany was a bad intention that took hold, almost like a virus. So you do have a certain amount of responsibility, but I think it's still, you know, doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It just means that we have to approach it carefully. And that's the kind of thing that I'm trying to do in our experiments.
Go ahead, Lynn, finish up.
All I was going to say is, let's see if we can clean up water, but let's take it step by step so we don't, you know, create a disaster.
All things considered, evil versus good, intention. Does it cancel out? Will good win? Does evil win?
Okay, what a question, George. I think that it depends. Sometimes it depends on what's more organized. Now, in the case of Nazi Germany, they were pretty organized, and they stamped out the opposition intention very easily. I think in general, most evil is not very organized and not very coherent. And I think what happens was, in some of the ideas that intention masters have talked to me about, they've always talked about a very focused mind state. And oftentimes, people who are crazy and evil aren't very focused. So I think that's one of the key elements that really distinguishes good from evil. And also, I think it's about group, too. It's like when you walk in a room and you can feel a bad vibe, and that becomes infectious, and you get part of that vibe, and you become in a negative way too. You've got a negative mind state. So I think part of it too is staying in your own positive state and allowing that to be infectious.
Okay, next up, we go to Los Angeles. Fernando, first-time caller. Hi there.
Hi. Good afternoon or good evening.
Sure thing.
It is a pleasure. I have to say that it's actually power intention works, because first time I actually got through. And I really wanted to get through. I got a question for Linda. Why is it that sometimes this power works or this intention works and sometimes it doesn't? And sometimes it seems to work faster than other times.
Okay, good question. I think that a lot of it depends on how focused and how specific you are, which is what we were talking about before. A lot of times people aren't really very specific. As I said before, they send out a general intention. I want to be rich. Well, how rich? And do you really want to be rich, or do you just want to be free of the job you can't stand? You know, you have to be really specific about, and you have to know what it is you really want. And sometimes you may think that you want one thing, but actually subconsciously you want something else. Another thing oftentimes sabotages you, which is sometimes attitudes you have and you take from the past. Like if you want something for yourself, but the little mind inside of you is saying, forget it, loser, you're never going to have that. That will also interfere, and that's the thing that gets sent out. So I think being specific is probably the most important thing. And then learning these techniques about a really focused mind state. And thirdly, I think sometimes you have to be prepared for getting what you want, but in a different way than you expected. So you may ultimately get what you want, but it comes in a different way. And that's happened to me a lot. When I think I want something, I send out an intention, and I'll look back and I'll say, well, actually, it all came to pass, just happened in a very different way. So you have to allow the universe to help you out in that way and decide sometimes the path you're going to take.
Lynn, what about the greed factor? You know, I want this, I want that. And even though your intention is strong, doesn't that affect things?
Well, I think so. I mean, my work's completely about altruistic intention. I mean, that's the kind of intention experiments we do on, you know, with the experiment on the website with people. It's always about healing something, whether it's the world or individual people or their financial situation. And I feel that that kind of altruistic intention has a rebound effect and affects you. You send out a selfless intention and you get things back. I think one of the big problems with intention is that it's been promoted like manifestation. You know, I want, I get. And that kind of just greedy idea of I want, I get, I want a bigger car, I want lots more money, I want this and I want that, I'm just not sure that's the optimum way to use intention. And I think the universe has ideas about that too.
I think so too. Let's go to Terry, Redlands, California, on the Wild Card Line. Terry, hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
I participated in the peace experiment with Sri Lanka last year.
Oh, wonderful.
Which was, it was a really fabulous, exciting thing to do. But I found the images of violence really disturbing at the beginning. And then later when you reported that, you know, there had been that rise initially and violence in the area before it calmed down to the peace, I wondered if we had caused that by us focusing on those images of violence initially.
We sure did, too. That's a thank you, Sherry. That was a really good question. Our views and the views with the scientists was that we had to be very specific and show people what was going on in Sri Lanka at the time, because a lot of people don't even know what Sri Lanka is. So that's why we introduced that in one of the early pages of the experiment. And for many weeks afterward, when we found initially a violence went up, we wondered, did we do that? And there's no easy answer to that other than to try it without that next time to see what happens. But what did happen with Sri Lanka, which I'm sure you know, and I'll just share with everyone else, is that after this initial increase in violence, violence plummeted, and that the increase seemed to be caused because in that pivotal week, the government of Sri Lanka, which was losing against the rebel Tamil Tigers, suddenly created some offensives that allowed them to get control. So the short answer to that is, I don't know, but I'm going to try it differently and look at it scientifically next time to say, okay, let's try it with a baby step, or let's try it with just sending a positive image out there with everyone and see what happens and see if we get a different result.
Well, we shall see, Lynn. All I know is it's needed now more than ever before.
Absolutely. And as we've talked about, we need to do an intention experiment together under some controlled condition, whether it's about the climate or it's about a lake or something. And I'd be delighted to do it with you, George.
Absolutely. We'll work on this and set that up indeed. Thank you. Lynn McTaggart, her websites, two of them, theintentionexperiment.com and her other major website linked up at coasttocoastam.com now. When I come right back, Simeon Hine joins us as we talk about crop formations and just what do they mean. He's next on Coast to Coast AM.